Du lytter til Radio 24/7,
den originale taleradio.
Velkommen til Aflyttet med Anders Kjærulf.
Velkommen til et program i ført skæg og blå briller. Den her gang optaget i Rumænien, hvor jeg har besøgt Bukarest og IT-firmaet Bitdefender. Aflytte, vi sender nemlig i den her og næste uge fokus på de trusler, der er mod vores online liv og på nogle af de mennesker og firmaer, der lever af at beskytte os imod dem. Et af de firmaer, det er Bitdefender, de har hovedkvarter i Bukarest i Rumænien, blev stiftet i 2001, har 1.300 ansatte, og deres sikkerhedssoftware, det sidder som end i en halv milliard computere. De har 72 verdenspatenter. Her er en hel del maskinlæringsalgoritmer, der kan detektere det, som man kalder for malware. Malware er et bredt begreb, der dækker over computervirusser, orm, trojaner, ransomware, spyware, adware, scareware og en masse andre navne for det, vi bare kort kan kalde for ondsindet software, der truer dit online liv. Så lad os bare komme i gang med forklaringerne og tage en ordentlig bunke fra begyndelsen. Du er inde i Aflyttet. Jeg hedder Anders Kjærulf. Velkommen til.
Two answers before you even get started. I don't know, and if I did, we wouldn't talk about it anyway.
Most of these systems are relatively easy for a sophisticated hacker to get into.
I was one of the blessed people because when I turned 5 and I become self-aware of what's going on around me, I had a computer in my living room. My mom is one of the dinosaurs. She's one of the last ones speaking COBOL. She's occasionally doing maintenance for legacy apps for a couple of companies. So yes, she was a computer program back in the 70s, 80s. I got a ZX Spectrum at home. I started experimenting with it. When I was a kid, I didn't go out too much because I kind of hated football. And rather than that, I was playing with a computer, so it's easy to understand that in the absence of the internet, you could only do so much, like learn CPM and assembly.
Bogdan Botasatos mor var computerprogrammør i 70'erne, så Bogdan har haft computer, siden han var 5 år gammel. Dengang, der var der ikke noget internet, så han brugte tiden på at lære at programmere.
So, threat landscape. This is the standard chart that every threat-based presentation should have. It's an inventory of malware samples known to date. This information is compiled by an organization called AV-Test. It's one of the toughest independent testing organizations in the world. They basically benchmark security companies and put them into the fight pit, you know, and in the end they draw conclusions. Which one is better, which one protects better against zero days, which one is most useful, and so on. I don't want to sound like I'm beating my own drum, but Bitdefender has managed to score number one since for I think 5 years in a row now. Whole point here is that we are facing around 700 million unique samples known to date. This is the entire malware output sold by humankind since the 1980s until 2017. I think the last chart was updated in September.
I dag er Bogdan Botasatos senior security analyst hos Bitdefender og er i gang med at gennemgå det, som man kalder for the threat landscape. Trusselsbilledet. Et ord, som alle sikkerhedsfolk elsker. Det er jo stort og farligt, og det er fyldt med cyberkriminelle og alle deres våben, det man kalder malware. Der er angiveligt at holde nu fast på nuværende tidspunkt registreret over 700 millioner forskellige malware, ondsindede, mere eller mindre menneskeskabte trusler mod din, min og statens computer. Men det er faktisk først fra 2007, det for alvor tager fart. Og siden da, der er der kommet 500.000 nye trusler hver eneste dag ifølge Bogdan.
What you see here is a little bit scarier because since 2007, the amount of malware basically grew elliptically. There's increasingly more malware pumped on the market. And more start to pile up at a growth rate of about 500,000 new pieces a day. How do you fight 500,000 new malware threats every day? Our malware analysis team is located in Bucharest, and we run one of the largest anti-malware shops in the Eastern Europe. We have like 120 malware analysts at all times in the Ash office. And this is kind of impossible for them too, because even if you have 120 malware analysts, you cannot go through 500,000 pieces of malware a day manually. That's next to impossible. So we had to adapt a lot here. We developed technologies that take care of malware by themselves. One of them is the notorious and increasingly famous machine learning algorithms, artificial intelligence applied in malware detection. Most of these samples are not new malware, but repackaged versions of known malware that we previously seen. This is happening because malware is precious. Think of the malware as like this kind of piece of candy, right? What's inside is valuable to the hacker because they have spent like months coding it and testing it and making sure that it works. So if an anti-malware solution sees that candy, it will automatically learn its properties, detect it, sign it, and then it's useless because it will be intercepted immediately on the first instance that it's seen. So what cyber criminals are doing are wrapping the candy in different wraps, different colors, different sizes, different materials, just to make sure that upon the first inspection, the anti-malware engine will not see the candy and learn its properties. This is a technique that's called packing, and it's been used since the early days of commercial malware. Basically, the attacker has the upper edge here because they can wrap that malware in multiple forms and multiple ways in such a way that the antivirus will not know what's running beneath it. This is what contributes to this incredible growth in malware. The fact that cyber criminals are actively packing these threats under different wrappers. The technique is called polymorphism, like taking more forms. We recently stumbled upon a polymorphic engine, something that can spit fresh new samples of known malware. This polymorphic engine runs in the cloud, and it is actively being used by multiple cyber criminal gangs. So there are like three or four pieces of malware families that are using the same polymorphic engine to change their shape from one infection to another. And the most frequently encountered family of threats in 2017 that uses this kind of techniques is ransomware.
Bitdefender har et malware-laboratorium med 120 analytikere, men de kan ikke klare det alene. Der skal kunstig intelligens, machine learning til, hvis man skal kunne følge med. For de fleste af den der halve million nye stykker malware, der kommer hver eneste dag, de er faktisk ikke nye. Det er den samme ondsindede kode, der er pakket ind på andre måder, som et stykke chokolade i nyt papir. Udfordringen for firmaer som Bitdefender og alle de andre, det er at finde ud af, hvad der gemmer sig bag papiret, mens angriberne, de kan nøjes med at skifte indpakning. De behøver ikke engang være specielt dygtige, for på nettet og ude i skyen, der kan man finde såkaldte polymorphic engines, programmer, der automatisk tager de cyberkriminelles kode og pakker den om, og tester, at den ikke kan genkendes af de nuværende antivirusprogrammer. De cyberkriminelles foretrukne værktøj i dag, det hedder ransomware, og det skal vi snakke en hel del om i dag. Ransomware, det er software, som for eksempel kan komme ind i din computer via en mail, med en vedhæftet fil, du klikker på, eller via websites, du besøger. Og hvis en ransomware kommer ind i din maskine, så tager den dine filer som gissel, og du skal betale for at få dem igen. Det foregår ved at bruge en teknologi, der ellers er god, kryptering. Når aflyttet normalt taler om kryptering, så handler det om at beskytte sine meddelelser ved at kode dem med en nøgle, så det kun er modtageren, der kan læse beskederne. Ellers er det bare en masse tal uden mening. Men når ransomware kommer til, så kodes alle filerne på offerets computer. Der er ingen nøgle, og angriberne kræver penge, som regel i bitcoins, for at låse filerne op igen. Det er en meget stor forretning, fortæller Bogdan, og den virker. Det skal kun køre én gang, så er man på den.
Ransomware is particularly important because it only has to run once on a computer. If it managed to run once, it will take everything hostage, and there is no possible way to get the information back unless you pay. In some very, very limited circumstances, we can find vulnerabilities affecting the in the implementation of the ransomware encryption algorithm, and we can work around that or guess the key and bring a removal tool to the customer for free. But most of the times, if you've got encrypted, you've got encrypted. That's it. You don't have any actual alternative to get your information back. And our statistics show that most of the ransomware is not something that's custom built for one cyber criminal gang only. Unlike regular malware, you know, malware groups operate like this. They create a team, right, that specializes in writing malware. They usually write their own custom malware strain and monetize it indefinitely. With ransomware, things are different. Ransomware has become so appealing to pretty much everybody because it monetizes well that it has been released mostly as a service. So ransomware is available to regular people that would like to make a quick buck just by experimenting with cybercrime. They don't need exactly knowledge to operate or write that strain of ransomware. They affiliate themselves to an existing piece of ransomware. They spam it out to people and they get a cut for just infecting people, not for operating the ransomware itself. And because ransomware has become so popular lately, there are families of ransomware and affiliate programs that lets you build ransomware for free. You don't even have to give the bad guys a cut. And this is such a command and control panel that's called Raspberry. Yeah, it's ransomware as a service, Berry, actually. It is available in the dark web, so if you have a Tor connection, you can visit an URL and you are able to enroll in this program.
Danske Mærsk fik en oplevelse med ransomware tidligere på året, som de helst ville have været foruden. I juni blev de ramt af det, der hedder NotPetya, noget som Bitdefender godt nok kalder for GoldenEye. Det er en ransomware. Det kostede angiveligt Mærsk over $200 millioner i tab, og et enormt arbejde med at genopbygge alting fra backup af systemerne. Selve ransomwaren, NotPetya eller GoldenEye, var i øvrigt speciel, og det vender vi tilbage til senere. Men hvordan laver man sådan noget? Ja, man går på nettet. De virkelig dygtige skaber af ransomware sørger nemlig for ikke selv at bruge det. Det får de andre til. De franchiser. De bygger malware, og så lejer de det ud til yngre, mindre dygtige hackere, som de så får procenter af fortjenesten af. Det hele foregår via dark web. Ingen kender i virkeligheden hinanden, men der er som en support og hjælp og opgraderinger og gode råd til, hvem man skal forsøge sig med. Seneste skud på stammen er en helt gratis ransomware-generator. Den hedder Raspberry. Det står for Ransomware as a Service, hvor man kan konstruere sin egen ransomware. Så kan man fortælle den, hvad den skal gøre, og sende den ud i verden, alt sammen via nogle få musiklik og lidt testen. Det er kraftig teknologi, men du behøver som sagt ikke at være specielt dygtig for at bruge det. Bogdan fra Bitdefender mener mange af brugerne er teenager, der vil score hurtige penge, men han advarer om, at de fleste ikke er gode nok til at dække deres spor. Og så ender de i fængsel, mens de, der har lavet selve den onde software, de får deres penge uanset hvad. Men hvem kun laver det her? Hvad er de for nogen?
Everybody makes it from the United States to Russia to Ukraine. There are a couple of interesting things. Russians, for instance, when they build ransomware, they don't hit their own targets. So they don't hit home. In a home market, if you're they have this kind of rule. If your computer has a Russian language set, you won't get infected. The malware exits. If by chance you get hit, they will provide you with free assistance. It was like a couple of days ago when I stumbled upon this Sigma ransomware. So they say, like, we respect a community of the independent states, countries. If you have been infected, contact us via live chat and we will decrypt your files for free. So yes, this is obviously a strain of ransomware that comes from Russia and doesn't hit their own people, because that's usually a bad idea. When you live in the same jurisdiction as your victims, these guys might end up running a complaint to your local office, police office, and when they start investigating, they will eventually find you and prosecute you. So, short answer is everybody does ransomware.
And this is it's big industries.
Yes, this industry grows at incredible pace because. This year alone, we identified 160 new strains of ransomware. So that's a major increase over the past years. More and more operators join in building ransomware.
Alle lande har hacker, der laver ransomware, men der er stor forskel på, hvordan de arbejder. Russiske ransomware-skabere, de sørger for eksempel altid for ikke at ramme maskiner, der har russiske styresystemer. Skulle et russisk firma alligevel blive ramt, ja, så tilbyder de kriminelle bagmænd at fikse problemet gratis, alt sammen af frygt for at blive anholdt af det russiske politi, der til gengæld er ret så tolerante, hvis man nøjes med at gå efter mål i Vesten. Trods risikoen er det en rigtig god forretning, for selvom man kun rammer 1-2% af sit mål, så er der faktisk penge i det alligevel. Bogdan anslår, at for hver eneste dollar, du investerer i ransomware, så får du $1,500 tilbage. De her penge, de kommer typisk i bitcoins. Hvordan får man så pengene ud?
No wonder that crypto ransomware has become such an easy business. Some hackers will go for the more professional packages that include obfuscation, spamming services, and so on. So they have to invest a little bit of money in this ecosystem to make some money. So estimates are that for every dollar they spend, hackers get back 1,500 more. It's an easy and pretty significant turnover that makes cybercrime a very lucrative business. We have a couple of information to support that. CryptoLocker, which was the first crypto ransomware family in the world, it showed up somewhere in April 2015, was operational for just 4 months. They managed to make $28 million and then they got away. And the story is really beautiful. Because are you familiar with CryptoLocker and what happened?
Yes.
Basically, this was the father of crypto ransomware. When we spotted that, we wanted to know more about it, so we analyzed it. We figured out the Bitcoin wallet that the payments were being made into. And because of the way Bitcoin works, you can actually look into somebody else's wallet and see how much money they have made. And one morning in the office, we were checking the wallet and we were like, oh my God, these guys have made $28 million worth of Bitcoin. And that was by the standards of 2015, when the Bitcoin was not anywhere close to $10,000. So we started notifying the authorities, and we started a collaboration with Europol. We chased these guys all across the world. So we were trying to see where their command and control servers were, and trying to seize the key server to make sure that everybody gets that information back for free. After 4 months of playing hide-and-seek throughout the entire Europe, these guys vanished because the FBI was coming hot on their heels, and they already had $28 million. So they were like, okay, thank you for your collaboration. Thank you for paying up. See you next time. They disappeared. Nobody knows who the CryptoLocker guys were. Nobody was arrested. Nobody was convicted about anything.
So how did they disperse the money?
They just exfiltrated from that Bitcoin wallet a little bit by bit to different other wallets, and then maybe they cashed them out in a way that I have no idea. Most likely they exchanged bitcoins in cash via what's called clearing houses, exchanges. It's possible. We know that the money left those wallets. Now that wallet doesn't have anything inside of it. So they leaked the money bitcoin by bitcoin, basically. It was a long process.
CryptoLocker var en af de første store ransomware på markedet. De, der lavede den, de formåede at tjene 28 millioner dollar i bitcoin, og de er faktisk endnu ikke fundet. Bitdefender, de prøvede at spore pengene via angribernes bitcoin wallet, den elektroniske punkt, hvor man gemmer sine bitcoins. Da de her punkter er offentlige, så kan man se, hvad der sker inde i dem. Europol var også involveret, men det lykkedes alligevel gerningsmændene at hæve pengene over en længere periode, tømme kontoen og forsvinde fra jordens overflade. Ingen blev arresteret. Og hvad værre var, andre cyberkriminelle udviklede teknikken endnu videre.
Ransomware has become more targeted. I told you that attacks against institutions are now preferred because they monetize better. Some people will not pay up. Will not give in to the hacker's demand because most likely they have a copy of their photos in Google Photos or in the iCloud. Maybe their critical documents sit on a USB drive or, again, in the cloud, and so on. But for companies, the situation is much worse because if they get their information held at ransom, they will lose data and they will lose business. Look at what happened with WannaCry and GoldenEye. GoldenEye is our name for what the Russians call NotPetya. It was the single largest ransomware incident in the world. So definitely there's a lot of lessons learned from here. If I were the NSA, I would learn my lesson. Never leak out your exploits because they will get used against civilians. And if I were a company, I would say I'd better patch my things when a patch becomes available. Nonetheless, GoldenEye targeted pretty much everybody across the world. It was highly destructive. And most likely didn't have any commercial purposes in mind. It is incredible how a piece of ransomware can actually be turned into a cyber weapon. Because usually ransomware monetizes. They lead you to the shopping cart, right? Buy the decryption key and we'll give you the information back. With GoldenEye, everything pointed against that. So there was no easy way to pay up. There was no easy way to even get the key transcribed to a clean computer, and there was no way you could have decrypted the information even if you got your keys back. So we presume this was a state-sponsored attack turned at against Ukraine, which in turn spread it to the rest of the world. Well done, whoever operated this GoldenEye crypto ransomware. Thing is,
didn't it take some of Russia down too?
Very few.
Okay.
Very few. I mean, that's maybe collateral damage. It took more of the Western world than Russia. We'll get to that soon. So, what's problematic here is that even if companies have backups that work and can restore those backups from scratch, the main issue is downtime.
Set fra en cyberkriminel synspunkt, så er det eneste problem med bitcoins, at alle bevægelser er offentlige. Så den punkt, som ransomware-kriminelle beder offerne at fylde op for at udlevere nøglerne til de her filer, som de har låst, den er blevet stedse sværere at tømme uden at vække opmærksomhed, og ordensmagten har lært en hel del siden CryptoLocker. De kigger for eksempel automatisk efter bestemte bitcoin-bunge, som ser mærkelige ud eller pludselig bliver fyldt med penge. Men også det har de kriminelle fundet en løsning på. Næste trin på stigen, det hed Crypto Wall, og den sørgede for at bruge en masse forskellige punge, og i øvrigt kunne tilgå dem gennem Tor-netværket, så man ikke kunne spore, hvem der hævede penge på dem. Den samlede fortjeneste på det cyberkriminelle marked fra at afpresse firmaer for at låse deres file op, det anslås PT at være godt $2 milliarder om året. Men ransomware er ikke længere et spørgsmål om penge. Hvad nu, hvis man egentlig kun er interesseret i at låse og ødelægge et system, og ikke har tænkt sig at låse det op igen? Og hvad nu, hvis man er en stat og har store ressourcer bag sig? Og nu kommer vi tilbage til Maersk, og hvad der skete med dem.
And I'll give you the example of Maersk, for instance. It's yours or Norwegian?
Yeah, it's ours.
It's yours. 6 weeks it took Maersk to reestablish full operations after the ransomware attack. And even if they didn't lose anything, any information, it took 6 weeks to just restore the computers from an infected state to a clean state. And that's what companies will rather not have, downtime. So they, most of the times, pay up, they get the decryption key, they just type it into the infected computer, press a key, bam, they're back in business. That's why ransomware still works. And it will continue to work because our estimations are that the total damage inflicted by ransomware in 2018, not 17, will exceed $3 billion. It's a mad world here.
Hos Bitdefender har man et andet navn for den ransomware, der ramte Maersk. I USA og resten af Europa hedder den NotPetya. Bitdefender kalder den for GoldenEye. Og den var noget helt nyt. Skaberne af den havde kombineret klassisk ransomware-teknologi med noget virkelig superpotent. Et lækket NSA-værktøj, der gjorde ransomwaren meget agil og i stand til at hoppe fra den ene computer til den anden. GoldenEye ramte over hele verden, og dengang der handlede det ikke om penge, men om at lave skade og ulykker. Angrebet startede i Ukraine, hvor en statslig server, som alle, der handler med landet, skal igennem, var inficeret. En server, som Maersk altså også var et smut forbi. De få, der i panik valgte at betale for at få nøglen til deres data, de modtog simpelthen ikke noget. Der kom ikke nogen nøgle. Der var ingen kontakt til bagmændene. Bitdefender regner med, det var Rusland, der stod bag, men de kan ikke bevise noget. Det tog Maersk 6 uger at komme tilbage på fuld kraft med deres container efter angrebet, og ifølge Bogdan, så er det faktisk kun begyndelsen, der er meget mere at vente derude. Og for at komme til det, så skal vi snakke om et andet cybersikkerhedsbegreb. Det hedder APT, Advanced Persistent Threats, en vedvarende trussel, hvor man overvåger et system eller en person, man vil ramme med malware gennem længere tid. APT-angreb, de er typisk lavet af større organisationer. Det kan være efterretningstjenester eller stater.
You know that everybody touts the cyber security landscape as the fifth dimension of war after air, land, water, and space. So now we are fighting battles in the cyberspace as well. And these battles start to diversify and become increasingly often. In 2011, 2012, we had like 2 or 3 known advanced persistent threats. Now there are 2 or 3 a month. we have a dedicated APT team that looks into suspicious behavior and scours into our malware zoo to find connections and analyze in depth attacks that might have flown over under our radar. So we have had at least one big piece of research a month. Most of these are advanced persistent threats, and most of these are sure to be made in Russia. It's not sure whether or not they are tied to the government or to like an intelligence organization in Russia, but we know for sure that they have been compiled in Russia. We have EHDevel, a threat creation toolkit that sits on the computer and is able to automatically update it and expand it, grow as the necessities of its operators grow. Pacifiers, one of the probably best known cyber espionage campaigns that target embassies and consulates all over the world, especially in the NATO space. It's closely related to Turla, as this is basically what our research is focused. Commonalities between pacifier, an isolated threat in Europe, and known APT operation originated from Russia called Turla. It turns out that pacifier is actually a component to the Turla group. It's nice. Inexmar. This is something that's not made in Russia. It appears to be made in South Korea. It's a piece of malware that usually targeted high-profile people in companies, like CEOs, like decision makers in the software world, in technology and intellectual property. When they were checked into the hotel, it's called that dark hotel, because when they were checked into the hotel, their computers would get automatically infected, and their information, intellectual property, code, whatever they had on the computer, was stolen. Interesting, now it targets political faces as well. So the unusual operation here is that Inexmar has switched from a commercial-based attack to a political-based attack.
De fleste APT-angreb kommer fra Rusland, fortæller Bogdan Potasato, men Nordkorea er også godt med. APT'er, de kan ramme institutioner, politikere og store virksomheder, og formålet det er tit industrispionage, sabotage eller manipulation. Men det bliver selvfølgelig værre endnu. Der er nemlig noget, der hedder IoT, Internet of Things. Internet of Things er de der dimser, der før bare gjorde noget for os, men som nu samtidig er på internettet, så firmaerne bag kan lave data på, hvordan vi bruger dem. Det kan være termostater, intelligente køleskabe, overvågningskameraer, vaskemaskiner eller smart TV'er, der er på nettet, og problemet med de ting er, at de ikke er ordentligt sikret, og at man i mange tilfælde ikke engang kan bruge dem uden internetadgang.
Something that you can't actually put your finger on. It's the entire amount of devices running various operating systems, most of them are Linux-based, which perform various automation tasks or surveillance tasks in the home. Things that you might have in your household. Cameras, smart TVs, weather stations, sensors, smart thermostats, and so on. These IoT devices have been around for about a decade now, but they have been massively commoditized. And to give you an example of this kind of commoditization, I recently changed homes, so I bought a new house, and with a new house, there were new appliances. I spent a lot of time picking them up and deciding what washing machine I will get, what fridge I will get, and so on. And it struck me that most of these devices don't have a dumb option anymore. So if you want to change your washing machine, You'd better want one that's IoT enabled, because bad luck, they don't make them without internet connectivity anymore. So everything that sells now on the market is connected to some extent, and you cannot configure it, set it up, unless you connect it to the internet.
Problemet med IoT, Internet of Things, er, at det breder sig meget hurtigt. Der kommer internet i alt. Da Bogdan fik en ny lejlighed for nylig, ja, så skulle vaskemaskinen skiftes, og han kunne faktisk kun få maskiner med indbygget internet, som det ikke er muligt at få til at køre, medmindre de er online. Sådan bliver det med alle ting, lige om lidt, spørger han, der er ingen vej udenom. Og alt i alt, så bliver der jo mere at lave til de her sikkerhedsfirmaer som Bitdefender, og for dem, så er det jo bare endnu et forretningsområde. Men hvad med politikken herude i cyberspace på sikkerhedsområdet? Den slags politik, der har ramt det russiske sikkerhedsfirma Kaspersky Labs, som amerikanerne har anklaget for at forsøge at spionere mod dem via deres anti-malware-programmer. Kaspersky har selv tilbagevist anklagerne, men amerikanerne holder på deres, og nu er deres produkter blevet smidt ud af både USA og England efter råd fra efterretningstjenesterne. Hvad synes Bitdefender om det? Er de bare glade for mindre konkurrence, spurgte jeg Bogdan.
We kind of condemned antivirus manufacturers from Russia, but we run core internet components on hardware made in China. And nobody has any issue about that.
We should.
Who knows? Maybe.
Come on over and sit with us. Look, you haven't seen Jackie and Doris and Helen for ages. It's very rude, you know.
Leave me alone.
Aren't you well? All right. But it's very naughty.
You're nothing but zombies, all of you. Just like those husband of yours you don't even know anymore. You're not living, you're just killing time.
Og det var altså Bogdan Bortisovo, som er Senior Security Analyst hos Bitdefender, og som jeg talte med på deres kontor i Bukarest, Rumænien. Florin Talbes er CEO og stifter af Bitdefender og bliver generelt bare kaldt for Mr. T af sine ansatte. Han er en af Rumæniens mere respekterede virksomhedsejere. Han er først i 60'erne og i øvrigt tidligere rumænsk mester i standarddans, noget han stadigvæk dyrker, senest ved et stævne i Argentina tidligere på året. Han bor i en beskeden lejlighed i Bukarest og bruger firmaets overskud på nye investeringer, og så tror han faktisk på fremtiden.
10 years ago, we used to talk about individuals, about activism. Today it's an industry which is organized and it's led like the very modern enterprises of the world. We talk about crime as a service. You can purchase the ransomware per hour. You can purchase, let's say, crime support services per hour. So everything is not only democratized in terms of access of everyone, but in terms of professionalism of the cybercrime, it's really very competitive. 10 years ago, or even 5 years ago, we could use the fingers of the two hands to just indicate which are the countries that are involved in what we call cyber wars. Today, all the countries of the world develop, let's say, offensive technologies or solutions or services related to cyber. Every country in the world wants to involve in cyber espionage and so on, in exfiltrating data. It's completely different. Why? Because more and more teams, state-sponsored, are involved in the cybercrime world.
For 10 år siden, der talte vi om aktivister og enkelte let identificerbare hackergrupper. Nu taler vi om en hel industri, siger Florin Talpes. Og for 5-10 år siden, der kunne vi tælle landene, der deltager i cyberkrig på en enkelt hånd. I dag er alle med. Derfor kræver det ekstra tillid at overlade sine netværker til andre, for når man sidder på sikkerheden i en stat eller i et firma, så er man ligesom en slags bodyguard. Man skal have alle nøglerne. Man har adgang til alt.
When you talk about, let's say, the military feature. I'm talking here about wars, okay, of the security source. In our opinion, every country developing technologies which are widespread in the world already build some military advantages. Why? Because when you have technology, and technology, don't forget, today every technology implies the usage of a computer. Not necessarily a desktop, it's about a chip, memory, it's about a computer inside the technology. Once you have the computer inside the technology, and that computer is somehow connected to internet, already you have some advantages there, because let's say if that technology producer is influenced by a government, could use that technology to do something else that technology was designed for. Okay, so it's not only about security, it's about every technology. By example, if you have, as a country, there is a chip manufacturer in your country, that chip could hide some code that could, let's say, at a certain point with some updates, execute something else that you are expecting to be executed. Okay, so in our opinion, it's a kind of race between countries which promotes and delivers more technology to the world. Now, related to cybersecurity, we are not, let's say, political related. Okay, that's why, by example, if you take a look to Romania, in our case, represent as revenues less than 1% of Bitdefender, that makes Bitdefender much less dependent of, let's say, Romanian authorities. Okay, it's true that in the global competition we make use of the fact that we are part of NATO and part of the EU. So if there is some war at a certain point, like today we see between Russia and NATO, okay, now you are, as a technology, viewed as, where are you from? What kind of country are you from? And we are positioning here as being a NATO country and a EU country. That's the kind of political position you can do. But more than that, not, once again, because on Bitdefender side, we try to build our independence. And don't forget, the independence generally is related to the economical independence. So more revenues you get, more significant they are as a weight into your global revenues related to one state, more economically dependent they are, and more influence could come from that state. That's why in the case of Bitdefender, we could talk about a Romanian state influence, but it's less than 1% of our global revenues. And that's important as positioning.
Bitdefender har en fordel ved at ligge Rumænien, som er medlem af NATO og EU, på samme tid. På den måde så undgår firmaet mistanker, som for eksempel Kaspersky, bor i Rusland, og som USA fører cyberkrig imod for tiden. Men Bitdefender er heller ikke afhængig af Rumænien som sådan. Det er kun 1% af deres omsætning, der finder sted her. Resten af alle de andre steder, siger altså Florian Talbes. Men kommer der nogle positive ting ud af den her cyberkrig, som raser over det hele, eller er det bare rod og disruption?
This kind of influence you are building using the new technologies, the internet, it's a major component of the war. Just influencing people. What that means? You need data about people to understand somehow their context, their personality, and using the right message directly to those individuals to influence their political opinions or something else, okay? So, in my opinion, the fact that the cyber war was added, has also a good side, a positive side for sure, because that renders some countries to pay much more attention to some components of the war which are not traditional, but which are significant today. And I'm touching here mainly collecting information, okay? And secondly, influencing at least political options of the people. Okay, you could be remote, really remote, but still influencing the political opinions and options of a population which is not part of your country. Okay, and this is significant because influencing political options means influencing the political system, influencing the strategy of a country. You're in fact influencing such a way that you are deciding who will lead that country. So instead of being let's say the local population choice, it's a different power choice. Okay, so yeah, in my opinion, that's classical today. What was traditional doesn't work anymore today.
We're in a paradigm shift.
Yes, for sure, because let's say the traditional way of war, or the traditional wars, are no longer, let's say, valid today. It's completely a new way. Okay, using in a different way psychology, sociology, new technologies, and so on. Okay, it is what we call the soft wars. But these soft wars could bring, let's say, more benefits to the country which is aggressive than a traditional war. Much more benefits.
Det er slut med den gammeldags krig. Nu slås vi med ny teknologi og psykologi. Vi kan jo kalde det for en blød krig, siger altså Florin Talpas. Men risikerer vi ikke, at det ender med kontrol og diktatur, det hele, spurgte jeg ham.
If we see a control of the state, in my opinion, that's impossible. Okay, we see some attempts in countries like China to control somehow.
In Turkey.
No, Turkey, it's a recent one, but let's say I don't see significant risks here. Of course, every country, let's take a good country. Good country means they really want to protect their population and so on. Okay, for some countries, maybe one of the biggest enemies today is the terrorism. To fight against terrorism, you would love to somehow monitor in real time what's happening with everyone. That's one way. If we know what we are discussing, what we are thinking, all this in the room, maybe sometime you are just catching also the bad guys. Also, because you need to monitor more people just to pick up the bad guys. So from a state perspective, they would love, from this only this perspective, they would love to monitor continuously everyone. Yes, but we could talk also about the freedom we have, okay? The privacy, which is a focus in Europe, okay, the privacy. So there is another force which is opposing to this, let's say, natural way to controlling more and more and more. There is a natural force opposing to this one. And in my opinion, in the real democracies, these forces are somehow balancing. Okay, they are in balance. Okay, it's true that in some countries could be some imbalance there. Okay, but don't forget that the new technologies today, in my opinion, are a huge support for democratization. Huge support for democratization. So.
Det er slut med, at stater kan styre og kontrollere borgerne. Staterne prøver, ikke mindst på grund af terrorisme, at få lov til at overvåge alle, men det er også en kraft den anden vej, kraften mod friheden. Og hvis man har et reelt demokrati, så balancerer det hele. De nye teknologier, de understøtter demokratiet, mener altså Florian Talpas, der også har nogle bekymringer. Og de handler om kunstig intelligens i cyberkrig. For hvis med maskiner med AI begynder at angribe hinanden, så kan det accelerere hurtigt.
We already somehow witnessed a kind of nightmare because, let's say, end last year, in 2016, we have witnessed the biggest distributed denial attacks, okay, denial of services attacks, using what? Camera, monitoring camera. Just very simple, we could say dumb cameras, but cameras still connected to internet for everyone to monitor what's happening at home, or connected to the security, physical security providers. And we have seen, let's say, a large network of more than 500,000, as I remember correctly, of cameras, and not only, it could be also baby monitor and so on, transformed to bots, was a bots army that used to be to flood the internet, in fact, the register, and that way somehow Twitter and some other big application services used in the internet slowed down to stopping. That was a kind of nightmare, because you are used, you need some services, your life is dependent of some services, and at a certain point, the services are not anymore provided, okay? But it's about that kind of, let's say, is what we try to do, in fact, with the families today, because looking to the number of devices, today the number of smart devices which are not traditional, and I'm considering this one as tradition, is much larger than a family has. And this large number of devices could be transformed to become a kind of cyber criminal army. Is machines fighting with other machines, but they are like, these are your friends, it's your baby monitor, it's your air condition, and these friends are switched to enemies, not for you necessarily, but indirectly for you. They are working for a cyber criminal group, okay? These are the kind of nightmares, but we are working on that side, and this is related to that kind of artificial intelligence that could come at a certain point, because at a certain point, if it will be a leap, someone will be the beneficiary of that leap. The question is that a good mind or a bad mind behind there?
Men er han optimist, hvad angår fremtiden? Er der noget, vi har mistet?
New opportunities are here. Yeah. And we have to adapt.
Og det var altså CEO og stifter af rumænske Bitdefender, Florin Talpes, der sluttede denne uges afsnit om malware og cybersikkerhed. Vi fortsætter næste uge, hvor vi har besøgt Finland, Helsinki og firmaet F-Secure. Der er tid til en lille smule nyheder fra ugen, der er gået. Og vi starter med de her bitcoins, vi allerede har talt lidt om før. Den her kryptovaluta, der er steget helt enormt i værdi på det sidste, men som også har en række problemer med kriminelle. Bitcoin-tjenesten NiceHash har netop fået stjålet indholdet af en bitcoin-wallet, en bitcoin-pung. De stjålne kryptomønter, de har i skrivende stund en værdi på over 440 millioner kroner. Det skriver version 2. Bitcoins. De har jo været under en hel del kritik fra mange sider på det sidste, og det skyldes måden, man laver dem på. De skal mines frem via nogle store supercomputere, der bruger enorme mængder strøm. Ars Technica, de anslog i juni, at bitcoin-produktionen, det bruger lige så meget energi, som hele Danmark bruger om året. Hvis nogen vil have et tal på det, så kommer det her. 32 terawatt-timer. Ekstrabladet, de er gået ind i sagen om National Genomcenter, et center aflyttet har beskæftiget sig intens med siden oktober. National Genomcenter vil indsamle DNA fra alle danskere, der har biologiske prøver, og der hersker nogen uklarhed om, hvilken retsstilling vi borgere egentlig har. Man kan melde sig fra, men man skal først melde sig til, og det er ikke helt nemt. Målet med det hele er såkaldt personlig medicin, at man kan behandle hver enkelt borger på baggrund af vedkommendes DNA, men der er også forskningsmæssige og kommercielle interesser i at have en fuld database over alle danskers DNA. Ekstrabladet, de skriver en leder fra 4. december under overskriften Staten tager din DNA. Andre med mere kyniske interesser vil også savle ved tanken. Forsikringsselskaber for eksempel, der allerede nu kræver dybt personlige oplysninger hos vores læge, før de tør forsikre os. I vores DNA vil de også kunne se, om vi er disponeret for kræft, for hjertesygdomme og alt muligt andet. Ja, oplysninger vi måske ikke engang selv bryder os om at kende. It may just be my imagination. Whatever it is that's watching. It's not human. Og med det, så er aflyttet forbi for i dag. Teknikken stod Jesper Vestfor, producer var Nette Birk, og jeg hedder Anders Kjær Ulf. Vi vender naturligvis tilbage næste uge med mere nyt fra det overvågningssamfund, vi alle sammen bor i. Her hvor noget går i stykker, fordi vi vil have, det skal gøre det. Og vi ser på det, og vi ler højt. Og der er glas og knuste skærmer over det hele. Og vi samler et skov op og ser ned i det og ler igen. Vi kan ikke andet, og så ser vi opad mod en gnistrende himmel af døde kanaler og drømmer om sandheden i en sjæl og et legeme. Det bliver ikke lige nu, men måske om lidt.
Du lytter til Radio 24/7. Om lidt er der nyheder.